Today on Vox Talks Economics, what do the current levels of inflation imply for the public finances? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram as well. This summer, Vox Talks is bringing you interviews from CEPR's Paris Symposium. And just before the COVID-19 pandemic, euro area inflation for 2022 was predicted to be 1.6%. Well, in May 2022, it was 8.1%. What does this mean for public finances of euro area countries? Agnès Benassi-Kerré of the Paris School of Economics and currently the chief economist at France's Ministry of Economy and Finance, and Giancarlo Corsetti of the European University Institute are here to discuss a problem that none of us really expected to see again. Welcome to both of you. Agnès, welcome.
Hello, Tim.
And Giancarlo.
Hello.
Now, Giancarlo, let's start with you. We have supply chain disruption. We have higher energy prices. They're made much worse by clearly a war on Europe's doorstep, and we have reopening economies as well, providing some demand. So does that mean we have to be reconciled to higher levels of inflation for the near future?
Yes, I think it is inescapable in a way. The war in the Ukraine has accelerated the process. You're rightly so, it was already there last year. So this is an inflation that also comes with a change in relative prices of energy, maybe a rebalancing of services and goods after COVID, the COVID shock. So there is great confusion under the sun. Inflation is a number that covers quite a bit of issues in reallocation across sectors in an area where it is, I think it's honest to say, uncertainty is very high. We don't know exactly where we're going to settle on this. So the short answer is we are going to have some inflation for some time. The other answer is that there will be an impact on monetary policy. Monetary policy will have to raise rate. And that is the new environment that we are living through, which sort of we forgot in the last 10 or so years, where monetary policy was on a totally different space.
I agree with Giancarlo. There are different components of in inflation today. In 21, it was a mixture between demand side and bottlenecks. And today, perhaps the central scenario we could think about is a permanent increase in the cost of imported energy, the impact of which will partly fade away when we develop renewable energy. But if you think that there's a permanent terms of trade shock, then since governments are trying to smooth the shock through different interventions, this means that you get higher inflation for a while. You don't get a jump in prices, although the shock is quite sizable. But if we spread it over time, so in practical terms, while governments are subsidizing fuels, putting in place some caps in energy prices, this is not forever. So if you have a permanent shock, it means that you have more inflation ahead, but a smoother process, which means more inflation, perhaps not spectacular inflation, but for a longer time.
And it makes a difference to the public finances that a large part of this inflation at the moment is imported inflation.
So this is really a crucial point because everybody has in mind the inflation tax and the fact that you could inflate the debt away and inflation is good news for public finances. I think this story fits well in demand-driven inflation. But today we have more supply-driven inflation, at least in the EU area. In that case, you should never forget that it has a negative impact on GDP, employment, which will reduce public fiscal resources. So in the short term, you could think that inflation will feed fiscal resources automatically, whereas on the spending side, you have indexed spending, but it's not the whole thing. You have also indexed bonds, actually, indexed debt. But after a while, everything is indexed. And so not only you have reduced tax revenues due to the negative impact of the shock on the economy, but on the top of that, you have a gap between the consumer price index and the GDP deflator, which is very sizable today, which means that if you think that most spending is indexed more or less on the consumer price index, whereas most tax revenues are indexed on the GDP deflator, then you have a loss for public finance. So this also needs to be taken into account. So it's not all bad. You have some good news, for instance, for subsidies to renewable. Obviously, there's less need to subsidize renewable, but this is a tiny share of public spending. The short story is that when the inflation comes from supply side effects, especially from an increase in the price of imported goods, then this is not good news for public finance. Then you have the interest rate story, to the extent that the maturity of the debt is quite long. And if you put aside the index debt, then temporarily you have a positive effect on the real weight of interest payments. But this is temporarily, and it also depends on what happens with the inflation premium and, of course, the spreads.
Now, let's look at monetary policy first of all, Giancarlo. For a long time now, the ECB has been talking about their desire to normalize monetary policy. How does the recent rise in inflation affect their plans?
I'm not sure normalization is the right word here, because normalization was envisioned as a going out of the zero lower bound in a sort of a back to normality. Here we have a sequence of shock that makes life different from what was, for example, the focus of the monetary policy review of the ECB. If I take a real perspective on what Agnes was saying, for countries that are net importers of commodities and energy, this realignment of relative price is basically a bill that comes from abroad. So a larger slice of the GDP needs to go abroad. And inflation is part also of an adjustment in the economy. Who bear the cost? How do you share this cost? There is profit, there is wages, there is also future generation. There are all these elements that are coming together. And inflation is one of the equations. At the end of the day, inflation is what make sort of balance this cost around. So it will depend on the policy response, it depends on the fiscal policy, it depends on monetary policy. So this is one aspect. For the ECB, the problem is extra difficult.
Yeah.
And it is extra difficult because, let's again take a real view of the economy. We are now facing the bill of climate transition, health, demographics, productivity, defense, Ukraine reconstruction, social inclusion, sectoral allocation. Those are like immense spending commitment that we cannot not do, because there is an issue of macroeconomic sustainability within which that sustainability is one component. So again, as we were talking during the conference, the good news is that there are savings out there that could be mobilized. The bad news is that this saving will come into efficient use only in an environment where macroeconomic, fiscal, and financial stability, minimum of stability is guaranteed. And this is the narrow path of the ECB, because increasing interest rate in Europe is not exactly the same as increasing interest rate in the US or in the UK. There is an extra kick, which is the issue of the possibility of, again, of fragmentation in Europe.
I think Giancarlo said something very important, that if you think that the increase in energy prices is here to stay, that you have a loss of real income that needs to be distributed, and people will basically disagree on the distribution. And you can think of the wage price loop as the result of this hot potato thing, where firms want to pass their costs onto the consumers, then you have an increase in consumer prices and then a loss in purchasing power. So wage earners will ask for compensation and so on and so forth. And nobody wants to take the loss. So the governments across the EU area try to break this loop, and this also helps monetary policy with these subsidies, with these caps on energy price increases, which can only be temporary, because the government cannot pay the gap between the market price and what is acceptable by the firms and the households over a permanent time. So at some point, there will need to be a convergence. Hopefully later on, with something that can be absorbed. And for instance, you have developed alternative ways of moving around. So for the households, it will be easier. But I think this is a very important component, and we need to think very fast about this kind of heterodox fiscal policy, which is no longer about aggregate demand management. It's about supply side. Actually, it's about the wage price loop. So it's a bit in the territory of the central bank that wants to anchor inflation expectations, and they know that the key is the wages. So in that sense, there is kind of complementarity between fiscal policy and monetary policy. And we need to think about the balance, because the more there is fiscal policy, the more the deficit. So there is a risk of tightening and a very detrimental loop between fiscal and monetary. And so ideally, you would ask for targeted intervention of fiscal policy and something that can have a sizable impact on prices, which is not so easy because the consumer price index, you have a methodology. And for instance, if you send lump sum checks to the households, this has no effect whatsoever on the consumer price index, but it alleviates the negotiations maybe with the employers. So you have this on one side, but you need to avoid across the board fiscal expansion, because then it's a recipe for more tightening in monetary policy. And hence, at the end, you get the reverse policy mix compared with what we need. We need low interest rates to invest for the private and the public sector to invest in climate change mitigation and adaptation.
We should not forget that also on the table, we have like an urgent measure for example, climate. So one of the issues that is coming out now is the fact that whatever intervention we do, it would be important to keep incentives for climate transition, right? So this has been like a discussion, I'm sure, also at the Treasury, everywhere.
Is that open. Possible, though? Because you see many governments moving away from
it. There will be a political dissatisfaction, no? Because other urgent needs, no? Like if we see an increase in poverty, because of the distribution problem, perhaps politically there will be different needs. But it would be important to keep the on the ball. And this is, I'm sure, you know, measures, as Andreas was saying, one needs to act fast. Sometimes measure can be adapted over time. But this, I guess, is a big challenge, no? Like in terms of the measure. You were mentioning the income support rather than price taxation.
Yes, can I ask a little bit about that? Because it's certainly a big debate in the UK at the moment, how you support the people who are most affected by the problems of inflation. Do you do it through benefits? Do you do it through taxation? How long do you do it for? These are very difficult choices for governments at the moment, aren't they?
So this is an area where, as economists, we tend to prefer lump sum transfers and to keep all the incentives there. And so different people, decision makers, have a different view. They want something that can be implemented very fast and explained. So as economists, sometimes we try to be very smart and we propose things like nonlinear pricing of energy, which makes sense. This is something that is extremely difficult to explain. And then also we should not underestimate the information set you need to do smart things, to compensate households the right way and fast enough. It was easier in a sense during the COVID crisis because all firms pay taxes to the same tax administration. Mm-hmm. So the support was just a negative tax. Yeah. It was easy to implement. The tax administration already had the bank details of all firms. Mm-hmm. So it was easy. For households, much more complicated. You have wage earners, you have independent people, you have pensioners, you have people under minimum income, and so on and so forth. On top of that, you have complicated issues like in France, most social transfers are indexed on the consumer price index, and it's done quite fast. And also pensions. So this is done quite fast. So then do you want these people to receive another compensation through a lump sum transfer? Or would you like to target more the middle class whose income is not indexed, but they are not at the lower end of the income schedule? So you have this kind of discussions, who you want to. And then very soon you want to also compensate differently rural households from, and so then you enter into discussions how to find them, how to define them. Mm-hmm. Are there households that don't have access to public transport? But how do you define access to public transport? There is a continuum of situations, and it becomes very complicated at some point.
No doubt it's complicated, but there are a couple of considerations. As of today, especially for the EU, the inflation situation does not seem out of control. Actually, the ECB is updating very frequently now projections. And so far, it looks like there is a possibility to keep this bout of inflation temporary and reabsorb it in a reasonable way, perhaps even without being too eager to do it, especially for what Agnes is saying, that sometimes the good things may not be implementable in the short run. You need to sort of sail different instruments until you settle for the right one. The other side that is a little bit confusing me is the fact that while in the US, definitely we are very close to full employment potential output by many measures, in the euro area, the situation is, again, different in different places. High inflation in some countries, low in others. Employment and participation differ. So there is a sense in which it would be important to be vigilant to make sure that the macroeconomic stance of the area as a whole does not implode.
Yes, I was going to ask about that, because when you look at the pressures, they're going to affect in the next 6 months, 12 months, they're going to affect different countries within Europe in very different ways. Is this going to put a strain on solidarity?
Well, there's an issue about a divergence or convergence of member states. And when inflation was very low, we were complaining that it's extremely difficult to carry out relative price changes when inflation is basically zero without pushing a member state into deflation. And now we have positive inflation. So relative price adjustment could take place. So it could be, in a sense, an opportunity to carry out this convergence of relative prices within the EU area. It could work well with the pressure on the labor market, because if the pressure on the labor market is higher while the unemployment is low, which you could perhaps imagine, then there are going to be more inflation in those countries with a tight labor market and lower inflation in those countries with a loose labor market. Hence, this goes in favor of a convergence. However, the problem we have is that the energy mix varies across countries. For instance, Italy is severely hit by the energy shock, whereas Italy would probably need less inflation than northern countries in order to boost its economy. So France is in a better situation with more friendly policy energy mix and still very high unemployment. So it's more consistent with convergence.
So in a way, you could also take a positive spin on this. We need to keep an eye on macroeconomic stance of Europe, because we know that without growth, we'll run into, you know, a minimum level of GDP expansion. And it could be that apart from inflation expectation, the expectation of a difficult period ahead is already cooling down demand. For example, you see sometimes a little bit of a hike in credit now that may be considered a, you know, harbinger of inflation. But it could also be considered as people rushing into getting credit now at low interest rate, knowing that the interest rate, you know, like if you want to do a mortgage, is now is already late. So there are lots of contradictory information. Any little bit hike in credit could just be the anticipation of a slowdown. It's not worrisome. If you look at consumer survey, you see there people becoming more and more worried. So it could be that at the end of the day, the ECB does not really need to hammer on demand, because it's already built in. So that's why I'm saying it would be nice to keep an eye on the macroeconomic stance, because definitely what we don't want, the situation in which interest rates are high, public finances in trouble, and the economy is tanking much more than expected, because already all this confusing signal from the market make people so risk averse, not that they stop again consuming or investing. Investing actually is the more, maybe even the more delicate topic here.
Is there a big difference between the EU area and the US, where obviously in the US the fiscal stimulus was much bigger and you have demand side inflation on top of the supply shock? In the EU area, we have accumulated savings. So not all households, not all firms, but on aggregate, they have accumulated savings and profits, in fact, during the COVID crisis. So this is a buffer that can be used, but depending on uncertainty, it will be used to consume, to rush to real assets like housing, which may not be good news. So this is what we are facing. So the good news is that there is a buffer. You don't need a big fiscal expansion to support the economy because people have these accumulated savings. The bad news is that you have no idea how they're going to use it, whether to keep it, to invest or to consume. And the surveys we have about consumption are not good. And we know that when the labor market deteriorates, then this is the time where the savings rate goes up. So this is where we are.
Well, if for all of you who are policymakers, we wish you well in handling what Agnès calls this hot potato. All policymakers listen to Vox Talks. Thank you, Agnès.
Thank you, Tim.
And Giancarlo as well.
Pleasure.
That was very interesting. This has been a Vox Talk recorded live at CPR Paris Symposium 2022. Now, every week we bring you the most important latest research, so subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And when you subscribe, you'll find more than 200 episodes now. So whatever type of economics you like, there's a Vox Talk waiting for you.